How you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Welcome. I'm Rance.
I'm Bob.
And it's the Quarantine Book Club.
Sure is.
And we are episode two of season two, baby. Episode two, season two.
Look at that. We've already made it to a second episode.
Mm-hmm.
How cool are we?
I think we're pretty successful. I'm looking forward to retiring after this episode.
Good. Are we without even finishing the book?
Who needs to? The movie's coming out.
I know. Well, even the book is only part of it, though. It's.
Did you hear that there is now a little bit of drama with Legendary Pictures and Warner Brothers when it comes to the Dune movie?
I actually just saw that. I didn't read it yet, but like apparently, Dune they want to release it like on HBO Max or something, and the guy yes. like Legendary is like, no, I don't understand what the whole thing is, but
it basically seems as though because the world is now the quarantine movie club
yeah.
and no movies are being released. Let's murder the theaters, by the way, and mm-hmm. just release everything at home. I am a big theater. Like I love theater. I yeah. love going to the theater and to the movie theater and watching it. Right.
You love the experience of going to the movies.
I do. I love to mm-hmm. spend $10 on a soda that I know is only 43 cents worth on their end.
Salty
I love
popcorn?
To spend gross popcorn. Mm-hmm. And I feel disgusting when I come out of the movie. I feel like I am preserved. Like I am a can mm-hmm. of salt. But I love it. And I sit there the whole movie with my hand in a claw shape because I've been eating all this popcorn and my hand is drying up and it's just buttery and gross and I don't want to wipe it on my pants.
Yeah, or touch anything and you can't hold your partner's hand. You're just like...
And then if you wipe it on the soda gets greasy. And I'm yeah. saying it with like a Z greasy, not an greasy. S greasy.
Nice.
So I love the movie theater. But yet what COVID has taught me is that I actually don't give that much of a shit about the movie theater.
I don't need the theater. I haven't.
No, especially if these movies are going to get released at home.
I haven't been to the last movie that I saw in the theaters, regrettably, I think, was Birds of Prey.
I forgot that movie even existed.
So did the rest of the world, except for everybody that's in Suicide Squad. Did they see? I don't even know what movies are being like. Did Suicide Squad come out on direct to
no
to movie?
Suicide Squad from 2018, I think.
No, not that one. Yeah, not that one. The new one.
But now there is James Suicide Squad,
right, the James Gunn Suicide Squad,
which is not Suicide Squad 2, but isn't it Suicide Squad 2?
Yeah, it is an indirect sequel. Also, James Gunn recently went Silver Fox. And looks better.
But he's also bad at tweeting, right?
No, he's fine.
Only 10 years ago he was bad at tweeting?
Yeah, that was years ago. We've erased all that because he's a talented human being who made mistakes and apologized.
He had a lot of very important opinionated actors speak out on his behalf, right?
That's exactly it.
He's the only example of someone who could be canceled and uncanceled for profits.
Yes, yes.
Right. His jokes were juvenile. Like, they were stupid and juvenile, but yeah. I actually didn't see them as a... Truth be told, I didn't see it as a reflection of his person.
No.
I saw it as a guy making stupid jokes that were juvenile, which I understand they can be hurtful, mm-hmm. but it felt glaring in that case. Like, hearty har, here's a joke!
Also, he literally said, hey, like, that was some really dumb shit that I said 10 years ago that I completely forgot about that I'm not that person anymore,
mm-hmm.
and the whole part of our like this, all of these movements is to move forward from this. So I mean, maybe I'm over here making excuses for another rich white guy, but at the same time, I never saw like a real major problem with what he did, except that he pissed off Disney.
Marvel. So, yeah. Disney. Well, the Suicide Squad, which is not the Suicide Squad, but is the Suicide Squad. Is sort of like his busy work between Guardians movies.
it was the movie that he accepted and signed on like the week after Marvel fired him. They were like, hey, guess what? Since they don't want you anymore, we'll take you. You know why? Because we're fucking edgy and you made child molestation jokes. Cool.
So do you think the Suicide Squad is actually going to be a good movie?
I don't know, man. I mean, it's got John Cena in it. Oh, so that means it's going to be terrible. Actually, he's...
The Marine is a piece of shit movie.
Actually, apparently he did such a good job that there's already discussion that that character is getting its own television show.
That's great. Actually, I think Cena is a way better actor than people give him credit for.
I mean...
Also, he's a legit good guy.
Right, right. I mean, he works... I mean, look, he's not making any, like, Terramana tequila like The Rock, but... It's fine.
Hey, you know what? Better to make tequila like The Rock, like a washed-up wrestler, than it is to make bad takes like Gina Carano, who is just really double-taking, leaning into those bad takes.
Oh, no. Really? I know that it's COVID bad.
COVID denial?
Oh, no.
100%. COVID denial. Trump support, Rudy Giuliani's all great. Yeah, no, she's actually a legit terrible person.
I hate her. I do too. Oh man, don't worry. She'll get killed off at the beginning of season three.
Mm-hmm.
They won't stand for that. Like that's the one thing you got, man. Hollywood is they're like no, thank you.
Oh, she's also a Parler user now.
Oh God, good. Keep them all over there. Keep them
enjoy
all
your parlor. Enjoy your super conservative Twitter. That's absolutely 100% just some kind of Russian underground information gathering system. Yep.
They're screwed. It's fine. Good. Steal all their identities. I fucking hate you. Okay.
Yep.
Hey, we talked. So, we read Dune.
Welcome. We did. So I wanted to spend tonight. So I actually request we get together and do this other episode of the podcast. So this is not one that's being live streamed this week. This is a you and me. This is a you and me baby episode.
Good old school podcast episode. Before we actually jump into Dune, though, one more question. How's your doggo? How's your
dog's
new doggo?
Fine. Okay. Let me do some measuring in my head.
Okay.
New doggo is good.
Last time I heard about your doggo, it was shitting and puking in your car.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
That's been all cleaned up. It's totally fine.
Okay.
So we're doing really well. We are. This is the rants update about the dog Bao's dog bladder.
I need to know dog Bao bladder news.
She is now doing really good in the crate. We let her out in the morning and she goes outside by herself and uses the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't got to put her on a leash. I can just stand there and, like, drink my coffee and watch her, like, drop out of 12 inch.
Is it in the backyard that's fenced?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I can just let her out. Right. Yeah. But before we were putting her on the leash.
Yeah.
But now, like, so that's fine. She is super rambunctious tonight. I felt terrible, though. No, putting my hands up there and saying this is not animal abuse. It is the abuse the animal did to herself. The dog was so excited over food that I finished up pouring the food. She turned her head, clocked her skull so hard on the side, like a doorway, and yelped and like literally like was like chewing at the air to make sure her, you know how like we rub our jaw and we're like, was doing that. And I was like, oh my God, are you okay? but dogs have big hard heads. Mm-hmm. And I felt terrible. She's fine. But yeah. So then I got this cat here, as Bob can see here, that the cat
is on his lap.
It's on me.
The cat that we were talking about earlier, and it was like, yeah, the cat just doesn't.
Doesn't give a shit about the dog.
Yeah. Yep.
Doesn't give a shit about the dog. So no, thanks for asking. The dog is doing fine. She is. I'm finding that I'm this person. I'm the person now.
Who has
dog treats laying around everywhere. I find them in my pocket because they're training treats. It's like, hey, you do a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Dude, training dogs way different than it was when we were growing up. Okay.
Because we don't have a father to fucking yell at them and beat them.
Our father just yelled at them, right? Yeah. And he was a newspaper guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a good way. But he just yelled. And now, like, we're really good about, like, positive reinforcement. But I've got training treats in my pockets, like, at all times. They fall out of my pocket when I go to sleep. And I'm like, gross.
Do you accidentally bring them to work with you?
Yeah. I almost ate one the other day, but they smell really good. They smell like bacon. This smells like bacon right now. Like actual legit bacon. I wish I could have you smell it because it smells really good. But no, I'm not eating this one on stream or on podcast because I don't know how long it's been in my pocket.
Oh, God. That's gross. So,
but she's doing good. Thanks for asking. We're still having some accidents in the house, but she's getting better and better. Here's the weird thing, though. She loves, not just likes, not just accepts it, loves watching me play Binding of Isaac.
Really?
There's something about the images on the screen that are perfect for her eyes. She watches the entire time, and not just for like 5 minutes.
The whole time.
But for like the entire time. And I can especially tell she's watching the tears that Isaac shoots out because I notice if they go away, like if I get something like the laser eye, she doesn't pay attention anymore.
Huh. Weird.
So, yeah, but like I'll take a video of it at one point. She just sits there and watches.
I heard she's also much like us into reading.
Yes. Today you'll find random things in her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And today I was like, here's this treat. Okay, I'm going to do this thing. Maybe I can leave you alone for like 3 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And I go into the kitchen and she comes into the kitchen, just trucks in with a book in her mouth. Like not a book that I've been reading, not a book that I even remember having, just a random ass book off the shelf that she must have like bit and pulled off and like walked in like, yow, here's your book. But I also think a little bit of it was regret coming to bite me in the butt because it's a book that I took out of my school's library when I was in college. A book I took out of my school's library and just never gave back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I paid for it at some point. It was probably like $90 that I didn't need to pay. But yeah, so it was that book. It's almost like her saying, bring this shit back.
It was nice. Yeah. Maybe it's honestly just your dog saying, Dad, I noticed you read a lot, so you probably need this. She was probably so proud of herself, too.
Yeah, well, she needed to go back in the crate when that was done.
We need to go back in the crate of Dune.
We do. So I wanted to get together tonight and talk about Dune because... Well, I think obviously we are talked about making sure that we're putting out plenty of podcasts. It's Dune December.
So many podcasts.
But I didn't think we touched upon everything that we could have in the first part.
Yeah.
Of Dune. Mm-hmm. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah,
I had a few things on my plate that I wanted to mention that I wanted to bring up. And not all of them are great because I feel like it's important that we do tear apart these books a little bit.
Just like your dog.
Just like my dog. So I wanted to bring our attention to a very specific moment of the book that I was seconds from putting this thing down and just not picking it up.
Oh no.
I'm gonna read you a moment that I think you can appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But let me find it here on my screen. Okay.
Find it on your screen.
So yeah, I'm gonna read
it on my screen.
Yes, that you can see on your screen.
From your mouth.
From my mouth.
What are you eating?
Oh, these are chocolate-covered almonds. I'm sorry.
All right, why are you eating almonds during the podcast?
I'm sorry, because I want to... It's because it's now my new...
You Dirk Maggs?
I am Dirk.
Are they skinny? Are they skinny almonds?
No, they're big, fat almonds. Look at that almond.
I mean the name of the brand.
No, they are Go Cup Nature's Garden Milk Chocolate Almonds.
I bought some chocolate covered almonds too, but they're like skinny almonds. They're literally like it says skinny almonds because they're for like being thinner.
Well, these are for being fatter.
Nice.
So I wanted to talk about this moment that I hated. It was actually the first part of the book that I truly 100% despise.
Okay.
It was not far after Paul, in captivity with Jessica, has his revelation. And in this moment of discovery, euphoria, and brilliance, where he discovers that he has basically Mentat capabilities, and he is the Kwisatz Haderach, that he also suffers the perfect white boy downfall, which is he becomes a Linkin Park song.
Oh, is he crawling in his skin?
Oh, my God. So I'm going to read this. He says, the emptiness was unbearable. Knowing how the clockwork had been set in motion made no difference. He could look into his own past and see the start of it. The training, the sharpening of talents, the refined pressures of sophisticated disciplines, even the exposure to the OC Bible at a critical moment, and lastly, the heavy intake of spice. And he could look ahead, the most terrifying direction, to see where it all pointed. I'm a monster, he thought. A freak. No, he said. Then no, no, no. He found he was pounding the tent floor with his fists. The implacable part of him recorded this as an interesting emotional datum and fed it into the computation. Paul. His mother was beside him, holding her hands, her face a gray blob peering at him. Paul, what's wrong? You, he said. I'm here, Paul, she said. It's all right. What have you done to me? He demanded. In a burst of clarity, she sensed some of the roots in the question and said, I gave birth to you. It was, from instinct as much as her own subtle knowledge, the precisely correct answer to calm him. He felt her hands holding him, focused on the dim outline of her face. Certain gene traces in her facial structure were noted in the new way by his onflowing mind, the clues added to other data, and in a final summation answer put forward, let go of me, he said.
Wow, man. Paul, hey.
Come on, Paul. Step it up. You just discovered that you are Jesus.
You're a fucking superhero, and you're pissed off about it.
I'm a monster.
I don't know.
A freak.
You know things. You have magic powers. You probably know Kung Fu now. You're like Neo in The Matrix, and yet you're butthurt about it.
How do you deal with when you get all-encompassing knowledge through time and space? How would we normally, like,
I mean, we literally look at it and go, hey, I'm all knowing. I'm omniscient. Cool.
But instead he balls his hand into a fist and begins beating the floor and goes, I'm a freak, a monster. Like, come on, Paul. I mean, I'm supposed to be on your side.
But it's like teenage angst, man. He's 15. You got to have a little bit of that. Otherwise, it doesn't seem real or relatable.
Did you ever have a moment, though, in your life where you thought, I'm a freak, I'm a monster,
Yes. Every high schooler feels like that.
I got to be honest with you. I don't remember having that moment.
No, man. I listened to The Downward Spiral on repeat so many times. Okay. Like, the world was made to destroy me. That's what you feel like when you're in a high schooler.
Was your head like a hole?
Yeah, it was black as my soul. I'd rather die than give anyone
control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I admit, I don't think I really ever had these moments.
The
because
whole world
I did
was
have
a terrible lie.
I had a terrible lie. I had an easy teenagerhood in this.
I did too, dude. We were fucking white dudes who like grew up in rural Maryland. We had an easy teenage life.
Like, the only thing that I could think of that was problematic was like, what plaid am I going to wear today?
Oh no! Guess
like,
what? Somebody
what grunge
told me
shirt
like
am I going to wear?
Yeah. Oh no. Look at this.
And how can I get out of raking the leaves today?
Right. Yeah. Oh, look. But I mean, like, we had some, I think, some at home issues. But but that's the thing, man. I feel like every teenager's like that. They're all like,
yeah.
The world is, it's the worst. And I'm
the world is a vampire. Okay. Who do you think is Paul? Okay. But who do you think now in this very moment is Paul Atreides' favorite band? When he's screaming, hitting the floor and going
motionless and white.
Oh, damn. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because that's my life right now.
You know, they're edgy and hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also poppy.
Yep.
And they're perfect for the palate, but also rebellious enough for the soul.
Wearing black makeup on my neck so it looks like my head exists in a void.
but I'm motionless in my name is Brian Motionless. What is his lead singer is named like Marcus Motionless?
It might even Paul be Paul. Motionless. It might be Paul. I don't know. I could ask. I could ask right now. Would you like me to ask?
No, don't do it. Nope. I will rather look it up. Thank you. Because we don't need to go into that place. Motionless in white. Let's see. We're going to find out who it is before we get in there. Chris Motionless. There we go.
Luckily, none of my family listened to my podcast. It's really funny. Before I came in here, we never stick on topic because that's what we do. I stopped into my kids' room to tell them that I actually had a really great weekend this weekend with my family. And I feel like it's important to take those few minutes to say to someone, hey, I had a good time with you this weekend and I appreciated it. And I appreciated that we had fun and that we didn't have arguments and that we did fun family stuff together. It was actually really nice. Like, I had a really nice family weekend, and that's kind of rare.
Well, that's because you didn't find out that your mom actually is a Harkonnen. But you only found it out through magical super universe knowledge.
I mean, I'm the Kwisatz Haderach. What am I going to do?
This whole sequence where I love the moment where he gets all of this knowledge, like from the great beyond, right? And he
gets magic
coalesces
knowledge
into his Kwisatz Haderach form, or however you say it. But it is such a Deus Ex Machina. It is such a pouring out of the necessary info that could have been more cleverly applied, I think. Like, we find out now that he's actually Harkonnen, and that he's and he just discovers it. It doesn't come out through any kind of surreptitious means or, you know, it's not a part of a greater twist. It's just, mother, didn't you know you are Harkonnen as well?
I didn't expect him to get this, any of this knowledge and experience and, I didn't expect him to fulfill this ideal power-wise until much later in the book. Like, I expected this to be the finale of the book for, like, him to be in a situation where all of these, everything aligns and him to, it to snap into place. And I know that maybe that's predictable, but, you know, it snaps into place and he goes, holy shit, I'm Muad'Dib. And now, you know, like that moment at the end of The Matrix, I go back to The Matrix. The moment at the end of The Matrix where Neo realizes that he's the one. You know, there's no dramatic tension to form this in him. He just sort of wakes up and goes,
I have this knowledge.
I'm a Superboy.
Yes. Yes, and I think that is, instead of it simply being piece by piece, I would love to see a moment where he had like a physical altercation and he got a little bit of knowledge through that. Like, he begins seeing things in a more rational / computational kind of way. Or he then possesses a new kind of knowledge through for something emotional later, and he begins thinking about it in a more emotional or computational kind of way and seeing the pieces. But instead, it all hits him at once, and it actually, to me, decapitates, I'm going to use body words, decapitates and or castrates any sense of character growth that he could naturally have. And it forces him in a matter of pages to experience this really supernatural growth that does nothing for his character.
The one thing it does for his character, I think, is fulfills your betting that you said last week, which is that he's going to screw it up. He's gained all this knowledge and this insight and has no experience in order to use it, and so he's going to fuck it up. I think that's the only reason that it's given to him, is to cause some level of dramatic tension later in the story.
Like, you can be given all this great knowledge, but really it's how you apply it. And he's still a child, basically.
Right, right.
Because he's, what, 15?
Yes.
At this point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have seen either that or, like, more than just little hints of what's happening to him earlier in the book then. So when we get to this point, it makes sense, instead of it being a giant info dump where it just drops all this power on this guy, like an unlocking of you know, opening a treasure chest and there's all this shit in there. Well, yep. What do I do with it now?
He gave himself a great IDKFA from beyond. Just, he's got all keys and ammo added.
Nice. I don't think that that was a Dune reference, by the way, everyone. It's not a Dune reference.
Goes back to our first episode.
Yeah. All right. Look, cyclical knowledge here.
One of the things that I do like style-wise, however, is that at this moment, and this is in the version that I've been reading along with the listening, is that and so if this is different from the original publication, and it very well could be, is that there are these moments where you have almost like a second Paul thinking his way through things. In this moment, like one of them, for example, is the implacable part of him recorded this as an interesting emotional datum and fed it into computation, where he's literally processing the world as a computer. Mm-hmm. He is so humanly disconnected from what's happening. And all of this, Frank Herbert puts into parentheses.
Oh, really?
To separate any of these moments where he's really like, he identified that he was thinking about it like a computer, and so therefore he processed it like a computer. Almost when it's too much knowledge for Paul to handle, so he puts it into the computer part of his brain, the USB part of his brain, which I do think is a really neat additive to the style.
This would have been something that in the direction of the audiobook would have been helpful for one of those moments to say, okay, now we're going to change narrative characters.
Yes.
Because I don't get that from it. I literally have narrator reading this line. There's no difference for me in which lines are which, and that's a real interpretation issue.
It comes down to it's almost as though emotion has been struck from him in this moment, and emotion is instead fed through a processor that tells him how he should emote. It says, there's one part where it says, "I must tell you about my waking dream," Paul said, and then in parentheses it says, "Now there was fury in his voice." It's very inhuman and very beyond comprehension. Mm-hmm. And I agree. Like that told me that I'm actually starting to identify that the narration of the audiobook may not be as good as I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because
knowing that that's a thing that I'm totally missing on, that is kind of a literary choice. That's sort of important. And the way you say that now makes me think a little differently about what's happening, which is a really interesting thought that the narration can cause a difference in the way the book's interpreted, which, mm-hmm. I mean, only makes sense. But that perhaps I should be looking at it more like Paul hasn't unlocked everything. He's in a cocoon state. Like, mm-hmm. he's gone from being you know, a caterpillar, and now the state that he's in right now is like this sort of like chrysalis.
Yes.
And that he's going to eventually emerge in the, you know, in the final butterfly state. And so that, like, right now he's just in this kind of like awkward in between, and there's more to unlock and this way to use this universal understanding. And maybe that's what the big, you know, like I said, so it's still like a dramatic tension, and then there's going to be another advancement of who he is later in the book.
I'm curious to know how he will continue to grow from this point, and I'm starting to think that it might be, it's going to be well beyond or well outside of the oversight of Jessica, I think. Because I think he's hitting a point now where he has a certain kind of hatred for Jessica.
Yeah.
Because of this Harkonnen knowledge, the fact that they are Harkonnen, but also that she's denied that. And he even says in here, he's like, just look at your face, look at your bones, look at the way you look, look at the way I look. Mm-hmm. The fact that we didn't know it now is mind boggling to me, because it's right. It's written right on her face.
Yeah.
And he certainly has a sense of hatred for his mother, because he then also comes to the knowledge that she wanted him to be a Bene Gesserit. She wanted him to be a girl, but he's not. He's a boy Bene Gesserit, Bene and the Gesserit. And now she's pregnant with a girl. that she's going to do this similar kind of stuff too, that she's mm-hmm. going to sort of set this child along this path of forbidden knowledge and I don't know, powerful knowledge that maybe a child shouldn't be exposed to.
Right. But I mean, that's the sort of like ongoing theme in this book anyway, is like yeah. you said that the whole,
parent, the Messiah. Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
The parents sort of, the parents, their sins being visited on the children.
Yeah.
You know, I am also curious about where that's going to, like, to know that you've got a character now who is like this all powerful character, and knowing that they're going to have like this little sibling, like what is that character going to be? Is that going to come to fruition by the end of the book? You know, is there going to be this birth? It's hard to tell because you don't know where this book is going as far as time frame wise. Like, yes, I don't know yeah. if this book is going to last weeks or years, you know.
I'm believing now, and now he's basically talked about how they need to go to the Fremen, right? Yeah. That the Fremen are, because if the Atreides is more or less a lie and the Harkonnen are in great control, that the Fremen are the only people they can go to for some kind of solace.
Right.
And of course that means that he is Muad'Dib. The question I have is, would he have been Muad'Dib if he was not the Kwisatz Haderach? Would he still be seen as that? Or is there like,
I mean, I think all of these are things that are going towards a full prophecy anyway. That, yeah, no, if he wasn't the Kwisatz Haderach. If he's not the KH, then he's not going to be the MD.
Yes. I do. I'm loving the book for its adventurousness of ideas. I love it for its themes. One of the other things that I'm thinking about is how much of this book deals with mastery over the physical self, mm-hmm. over the body. And that everything is about the body. The body's water. They talk about like getting rid of the body's water all the time. She yeah. even says at one point, like, she's crying during this, and she thinks, Jessica thinks,
what a terrible waste of the body's water,
right?
Uh-huh.
So there's always this sense of like control over the body, whether it's through the expulsion of bodily fluids, whether it is through, but by choice or not. Or the use of still suits to reprocess the body's fluids, mm-hmm. or even the shields that we didn't talk about last time. And I absolutely adore the concept of defense in mm-hmm. this series. And I remember seeing it visually in the 1984 movie with the shields. They literally wear like belts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so much of this book is veils, whether it is a still suit to protect you from the outside world, whether it is a shield to protect you from the outside world, whether it is skin to keep your body's water from being exposed to the outside world. And I'm constantly thinking about layers and layers and layers in theme. I don't know if that was something that was on your mind, or if you had been like, had noticed that kind of stuff as well.
Not really. But not only because I don't think I thought as deeply about it like that. I think like you saying it, like it's there, you know, in the back of your head, but maybe not processing it. I think I found what was interesting to me was the level of, I don't want to say helplessness, because I don't think that's necessarily the right word, but that this planet forces on people, that like the shields, the fact that the shields, which are such a cool idea, and you get right at the beginning of the book, you're like, oh man, I can't wait for some like sweet shield combat, and we're in this moment in the book where like the shield comes in handy, and you get on Arrakis and shields are effing worthless. They attract sandworms.
Yes.
Everybody who's like, you're wearing a shield, that's stupid. You can't use shields and laser guns. Otherwise, it'll create a possibly it'll blow you up. Possibly it'll create a giant nuclear explosion.
I love the phrase "laser gun" too. Mm-hmm. It is such a shitty, pulpy term for a laser gun. Watch out for them laser guns.
But I think that's us thinking about it and going, okay, well, there was no real explanation of what this was back then. Like your 50 sci-fi ray guns and stuff like that. But like lasers and phasers weren't a real big thing until around this time period anyway. Like phasers. Star Trek was like, yo, phasers, because it's not lasers. And that same thing. Was it like a, hey, I don't want to say laser gun because that sounds dumb, so we're going to say laser gun, or I don't want to say laser, so we're going to say phaser.
Maybe just call them laser swords then.
Yeah, I know.
Come on, figure out your laser swords.
God. Star Trek Wars.
That was another point of conversation, though, that I wanted to ask you, which was we were talking about last podcast how much of Game of Thrones, how much Star Wars drew from this. And you are the resident Star Trek master. You know so much about Star Trek that I have you know more about Star Trek than I've what is the phrase? You've forgotten more about Star Trek than I've ever known. Are there
I don't
any,
think that's a good thing to say though.
But it just means you know a lot.
I know.
Right. Have you noticed any kind of crossover between Star Trek and this, or things that in Star Trek might have been Dune inspired?
Nothing off, I could think about it maybe, but there doesn't seem to be anything really like catching me as far as that goes. I think Star Trek is more Western inspired.
Oh, okay. And okay, like Western, like Western.
Yeah, like American frontier Westerns. It's about it's about people going out and exploring the unknown for the sake of exploring the unknown. It is the greatest version of Manifest Destiny that you could possibly imagine. I mean, it is
without it necessarily being colonization,
right? Exactly,
because the Prime Directive keeps them from colonizing.
Yes, it is, and it's. It's almost like this attempt at doing westward expansion without all of the harmful side effects that westward expansion was. You know, no smallpox blankets and no trail of tears.
No missionary work to convert, right?
Right. And when they find characters like that, they're usually the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. I think that it's probably a little less. I think Star Trek takes its technology cues and things like that from outstanding sci-fi. But as far as its themes, I don't think that it's got a lot in common with Dune. Just because of the fact that it's like the level of military structure and it's intended to not be war. You know, like there's the whole Roddenberry didn't want there to be wars in Star Trek because in the future we don't have wars. And if there's somebody who wants to make a war, they're the bad guys. Whereas in Dune, I mean,
The Harkonnens and Atreides
war.
Are just
it's like
at
a war in the stars.
It's almost like a Star War.
Yeah. Weird, right?
Strange. The other thing this portion of the book, this last section of book one has been on my mind since I read it. And it's also the first time that we see that Jessica functions
like
as
Messica. Am I right?
What a mess. That she functions as a willing subservient to someone else. In this case, to Paul, because Paul's like, look, we have to get out of here. We have to find our way out. And she's like, oh, what do we do? Which is the first time in the book that she's really been like that.
Yeah.
She's always worked in compatibility with Duke Leto.
And she's shown her power over others repeatedly.
Yep. And now she's like, all right, Paul, tell me what to do. And she even says in there, she's like, I don't think I know you anymore, which is a really sudden accusation to make when you and your child are you are held captive by these beings who want by these people who want to kill you. And you're like, I don't know who you are anymore, Paul. Like, fucking just let him be Paul right now. Yeah. Just give him what he needs. If you're going to be subservient, come on, Jessica.
Also, if you're aware of like these prophecies and all this other shit, why don't you look at it and go, oh, hey, well, maybe this is this prophecy that's fulfilling itself. So
so is this then, this is one of those places that I think that Herbert, at least personally, as I was looking at it and thinking about it more, that Herbert sort of falls at a disadvantage because almost here we're seeing motherly intuition as a weakness as opposed to a strength.
Yeah, no, I need her to be more active in what's happening and not just use magic words once to help get him out of this situation. Like, once they're in that situation to start being like, hey, I know you know all this desert stuff because it's magic in your brain now. Mm-hmm. But like, maybe we could have a conversation about what we should be doing.
To continue being a tool for guidance.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, an advisor.
And that is in good writing. And to maybe make Paul a more relatable character and to make him go towards this character that you want him to be by the end of the book to start. He learned from his father the importance of taking the advice of the people around you. Like it shouldn't be one of his failings. He should be stopping to ask her maybe that's the point, is that as a teenager, you think you know everything. And now when you do know everything, that it becomes a detriment because you're overlooking just somebody else's input, which is the most important thing. But also she's not offering it.
Yeah. And she's also her emotional reaction to his sudden change. Mm-hmm. Is overboard, right? She's a woman. She's emotional, of course.
Right.
And that is a point at which I think I was the most disappointed in Herbert here because Jessica, who I was seeing as this character who is remarkably powerful, is all of a sudden deeply subservient, and I'm not really sure why. And it feels like it falls under the auspices of like, oh, well, it's her mom and her son is going through a weird situation, so she's sensitive to that. And I'm not a mom, but that feels actually untruthful.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now, knowing
gonna be
how...
Like, you're going to be like, yo, you're going to listen to me right now, or I'm going to spank your little ass.
Well, especially as a Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
Right. She expected this. She wanted this.
Right. This is like what she's trained for.
Yes, and what she's trained him for.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, there is a little bit of weakness, and maybe it falls into that. I needed some filler chapters in the book, in the magazine that I was writing this month. Because a lot of what's going on right now in the book, from there to where I'm at right now, a little bit past that, honestly, is the first time I felt like this book has been a bit of a slog.
At the beginning of book two?
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm ready to let's move on. I don't need. Look, I read Fellowship of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need another book that's 400 pages of people walking. So like. Let's move on quick, please.
Well, if we look to it, where this is inspired by, a lot of this, even if it's not intentionally inspired by, it is Exodus in the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is always the removal of the self from society to perhaps then return later.
Yeah.
Exodus was really only a few, like, it was short. The Exodus was long, but it was short.
Yeah.
And Paul is becoming the Moses right now. I mean, Maudib is basically Moses anyway, as it is.
Yeah.
The one who points the way or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's going to was it Charlton Heston? Was that Ten Commandments? Is that Moses?
I don't remember who did
that. I don't remember. Is it 60s? That's this time, right?
I think it might be before that.
Oh, God. I don't know. I'm not going to look it up the way I did Chris Motionless.
Chris Motionless,
also known as Christ Motionless. Am I right? Making a lot of connections here.
Man, we've talked such serious talk about a book.
Yeah, and this is I feel like I needed this though because I'm finding that I'm enjoying Dune.
Yeah.
However, there are places like this where I really feel it's 1960s.
Yes. Yes.
And I almost feel like I could highlight with a marker all those things that I wish were edited out because I feel like this is a book that required some editing. There's a lot of it in the beginning. Also, perhaps this point that you're at that I haven't progressed through yet, where what is otherwise, at least in the version that I have, 757 pages that probably could have been cut to a nice slim 500.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know. And as someone, I don't think I could edit it to that, but it damn well feels like I could have used a bit.
I think you could have, man. I think that there's definitely some
bloat.
Yeah. And that's not, again, it's not bad to have slow burn science fiction. It's my favorite type to read. But it does get to the point where there's some times where you look at it and you go, all right, maybe this is a little bit much. Like, I don't need every... I'm in a part where they're in the desert and they're having some desert issues.
And is that a
I'm just saying that, like, they're gonna you know they're gonna have desert issues. This seems to be like I want to get to the point where they're having issues with running from sandworms and stuff like that. Some of the issues that they're dealing with right now, maybe, and a little unexpected but not excitingly unexpected, sort of like
everybody's losing water.
You have sand in your clothing.
People are dying of water?
No, nobody's dying at this point. But
Was this a moment where Paul is supposed to be seen as a more benevolent leader, perhaps, since he is the Maudib? Is this developing his Maudibianness?
No, dude, this is still just him and Jessica slogging through the desert.
Oh, it's just walking?
I mean, pretty much, yeah.
You know what he should do? He should just lean over to Jessica, turn on her shield, and just let the sandworm eat her.
Yeah, I mean, he's that mad at her. Come on, let's do it.
It's like, come on, Paul. Well, do you find that the strain in their relationship continues
does. You can tell there's a little bit, but it's been loosening. Like, he's getting over it because he's like, I mean, because that's the only way I think the book can go. I don't think that it's going to make sense. He needs allies. Like, I don't think that it makes sense for him and her to be on the outs for an extended period of time.
So is this a matter of, like, he is going to lead the Fremen? Is that what is that? Oh, is that where this is leading? Is.
Yeah, you know it is.
Where he will be the white savior who leads the indigenous people of this planet to a great salvation, especially because he's trying to build an Eden, basically.
Unfortunately, yeah. Absolutely. But I think that – I don't know that that was Herbert's intent because I think what Herbert is trying to do is to indoctrinate him. I think with the idea of characters like Kynes, that Fremen isn't necessarily a state of where you're born. It's a state of mind.
Right.
And that the Fremen accept you – if the Fremen accept you as a member of their society, you're Fremen. Like, you were never an off-worlder. So I think that's the idea that he's going for, and that's why all of the knowledge is in his head, because if the knowledge isn't all already in his head, then he is looked at as an outsider. So he has to be able to come in and be like, yo – like, almost like –
it's like his passport, basically. It's like drawing up his passport and be like, I'm Fremen now.
He's dodging his white saviorness by being handed instinctual knowledge.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think it's, you're not, we're not changing the story. That's what it is. Yeah. So at this point it's like, it's gotta be accepted. I think that I'm hoping
this is Jon Snow going to the wildlings.
Yes. Yes. And them saying to him, well, you basically have always been a wildling. All you had to do was come north of the wall. Like Starks are, you know, Starks have all had are men of the North. So
my God, you're I'm one thinking of us about anyway. It more. Think about it more. I'm thinking of Robb Stark. I'm thinking of Catelyn Stark, like the same kind of like tensions that they had as Robb mm-hmm. became of self. And like,
yeah,
that
man.
Catelyn took the side. Catelyn was very similar to Jessica in this regard where like she was responsible for training.
It's actually one of the reasons that I'm worried about. I know this sounds terrible. I'm worried about Jessica's baby because of the Red Wedding.
Oh,
like what
I didn't
happens?
Think about that at all. Mm-hmm. Yo, I didn't think about that at all. Mm-hmm. Well, what and Baron Harkonnen like, is still alive, so
yeah, dude. Like, oh, weird. Also, yeah, when you think about it, there's definitely like Fade Rautha, is that his name? Is going to mm-hmm. want Paul dead because Paul now is a challenge to his
authority and his presence.
Mm-hmm. Like, whew. It's yeah. There's definitely. I same thing. I keep going. Oh, it's Game of Thrones is Dune, but with Snow.
This is, and I'm wondering. I would really like to do some more research too into seeing how these, because I do think these are fairly unique themes to Dune, especially for the era in which it's written, and I think that's what makes it stand out so much. Is that to my very limited knowledge, that I don't see these kind of themes in other works until after Dune.
Yeah.
Like you were saying with Game of Thrones. But also the one I was thinking of a lot of the time was Wheel of Time as well.
Which I have no experience with whatsoever.
So in Wheel of Time, and anybody out there who is a Wheel of Time fan is literally going to find me, and they're going to sharpen a stick at both ends, and they're going to spit roast my ass because they are so ready to hate people that don't understand Wheel of Time. But in Wheel of Time, it is you have women. The Aes Sedai, the women, there are women who possess a power, the magic power in the world, basically, right? They can, you know, connect to the wheel, whatever. And that is not a power that is present in men. However, Rand Al'Thor is a man who begins touching this power. But if men touch this power, they go insane.
Mm-hmm. And is he going insane?
Yes, but no, he's like, I think there comes a point where like, he sort of
does he become Maudib? Does he become the Kwisatz Haderach?
No, he does. There is a prophesied one, right? Mm-hmm. He's the dragon reborn. He is a prophesied one who is like supposed to connect the,
does he come out of a fire with dragon eggs?
I don't remember. I read six books of that series. Let me tell you, I read six books of the series. I read, and this is how I can prove it. I read the Eye of the World, The Great Hunt, whatever the third one is, Shadows Rising, whatever the fifth one is, and Lord of Chaos. This is the first six, and then we get like Crown of Swords and others. So I know them, right?
Didn't Jordan pass away, and like now his kid's writing it? Yeah,
and Jordan's passed away, and what's his name? Brandon Sanderson is writing it.
Okay,
Jordan didn't know how to shut the fuck up for one. Like that guy could not shut up. These books are like 1,200 pages. I read all this shit when I was in seventh grade, and I'm not young, so like that was. If I'm almost 38 now, I read it in seventh grade. I would have been 13. So 25 years ago. And let me tell you what, none of them were memorable enough for me to remember.
That is a series that I have
no desire to go back.
I have no interest you know, what's going to happen though, man, we're going to talk shit on this so long that eventually somebody is going to go, hey, man, you guys, you know, you realize that you're going to have to read a Wheel of Time book, right? And I'm going to go, look, let's spin the Wheel of Fortune and pick a random Wheel of Time book, because from what I hear, it doesn't matter which one you start at because they're all the same book.
I would happily start with the Brandon Sanderson one because they're much smaller. Like right in the middle. Like, I actually think it'd be a fun experience to leap into a Wheel of Time series right near the end and be like, did it matter? Can that be something we do in the future?
What do you mean? Read a random Wheel of Time?
Read one of the last ones, like 12, right? Okay. Or if they even got that far.
All right.
And just answer the question, did it fucking matter? Did we need the books prior to? And if we could come,
we could invite, I've got an expert for that series. So
do you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I would love it. Mm-hmm. Did it matter?
That'll be maybe that'll be next December.
That sounds like a great idea. That would be a really good, enjoyable process. Also, because that's that point of anger and hatred that people have, where I'm sure that they're probably like, Brandon Sanderson shit all over it. Brandon Sanderson, who's an accomplished writer in his own regard, shit all over it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd be down for that.
So, were there any things about Dune, about the first book, that you have any issues with, or that you want to bring up that maybe we didn't touch upon? And when we say the book, it's the first book of the first book. Right, it's book one, right, Muad'Dib. Or Dune. Is it book one, Dune, and then second book is Muad'Dib?
I don't remember already.
I don't know. It's the first section of the first book. Sorry, y'all.
Book one might be Arrakis.
Okay. Okay.
I don't think that I haven't spoken about any problems that I've got. I think that where I'm at now in the, like, where we were at, where the last book ended, I think there's a little bit of shit or get off the pot, mm-hmm, that I'm feeling like right now, where I need a little bit more development. I also, they spent so much time creating some of these characters that I know you need to, like, kill some of them in order for things to be, to, like, have meaning. But I, yes, feel like you're going to get to the point where there's not going to be enough people left to be a interesting support system for Paul when he gets later on in the book. Like, if we continue just killing off these characters.
He is surrounded by a lot of characters that could sort of function as insert counselor here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, they're all the people in Game of Thrones that wear chains.
Did I say that Gurney Halleck.
The other H guy.
Oh, come on. The Mentat. What the, yes, hell's his name?
I know, H. Mentat. Let me see if I can find it.
The other one. He is your Barristan the Bold, basically.
I mean,
in my head, he's that idea of the old guy who failed and let he was the, like, the head of the guard who failed and let the king die. And so now he's going to be kind of disgraced, and eventually I think he'll find Paul out in the desert somewhere.
Well, as it goes, Barristan is one of my favorite characters. So,
I mean, yeah,
he was a cool guy.
He was a cool guy,
especially in the show.
I mean, a lot of characters that were in the show were really cool.
I still never finished that show, by the way.
You still haven't? Don't.
3 episodes left, and I just don't want to. I just don't even feel like it.
Don't do it. Don't do it, because there's some stuff in there that will you'll be like, oh my God. But B, you'll be fucking pissed off about.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, last thing about Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Very beginning of book one, right? When Paul is having his first practice session with I believe it's with Gurney Halleck.
Is it Arya? Are you thinking about Arya?
Yes, that Gurney Halleck pulls the Arya trick, where Paul gets him in this moment of risk, and Gurney Halleck goes, do you remember what he says?
You're dead anyway, or something?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, exactly. He's like, look down.
Yeah.
And he's got the knife to his privates.
Yep, Yeah, no, come on, Martin, you're killing me, man. I know this podcast has turned into less about like Dune and more about how Martin ripped off Dune.
Well, but I think it also means that you could just read Dune.
Yeah,
and not read Game of Thrones, because Dune's at least done for the most part.
There you go. Exactly. I guess it's done. I don't know. Who cares? Whatever. We're going to read this book and then I'm never going to read anymore. It's fine.
It's fine. Well, so what do we got coming up, man? What do we got coming up? Anything that you want to say or
I mean, you know, the normals. I don't think there's anything overly exciting, except it's just the holiday season for us here, so we are doing since we're doing December Dune, that's going to be fun. On Twitch this month, I am going to be doing Dragon December. Everything starts with the D this month for me. So I'm going to be painting dragons on my Twitch feed.
That's daringly dastardly and disgustingly dangerous that you're doing that.
I'm thinking about dragons because I was thinking about Dame of Drones.
Were you thinking about George Dar Darton?
Exactly. Wouldn't it just be George D. D. Martin?
Yeah, but now I want to say is Dar. I also, as we're podcasting, I'm looking that I really need to get. So over the summer, I got some shiny new teeth on the side, but now I've got this thing going on and don't like it.
No,
you
I see. Hear
you. Well, it's just been there. It's a gap. For those out in podcast land there, I just got this gap where a tooth has never been really before. Mm-hmm. So I got to fix that.
I have teeth that I want to get fixed and then COVID happened and now I'm really mm-hmm. sad because I would like them fixed.
Your teeth look wonderful to me.
Thanks, man. I hate them. I hate my fucking teeth.
I think they look great. I have some news for you that I don't know if you saw the last time that I was on Twitter or not, but that I did announce.
I did not see. Give me some hot takes.
So hot takes. And this
hot
actually
takes from Jonathan Frakes?
Hot take. No takes from Jonathan Frakes. But I am announcing that in quarter two of 2021, my debut novel will be released.
What?
So I am self-publishing. I have decided to forego, especially looking at how COVID has altered and affected the careers of agents and affected the publishing world, mm-hmm. that I am choosing to use the knowledge that I possess of self-publishing, and I'm going to go ahead and just begin publishing my series online.
That's exciting, and I'm
pretty psyched.
I can't let wait me to read it for the podcast.
Dude, let me tell you what. I have been looking into, because I am, here's, I'm putting this up to the world. I am knowledgeable enough to know that I know nothing. The only damn thing that I can do with this is write it and edit it, right? Mm-hmm. Design, art, I'm all buying that.
Yeah.
I'm buying it, right? There's so many people in the self-publishing world who think that they can do it all.
No.
They can't.
Nope.
They can't. So I have been looking for artists to commission for this because if anybody doesn't know, so the name of it is His Ragged Company. It's the start of a series and it is a weird Western novel. And I'm really I would love to see something. I've been doing a lot of market research and looking into the way the fantasy books and covers. But what I'd really love is something that looks super pulpy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I something that even looks like it's worn around the edges, like an old 5-cent pulp novel, mm-hmm. with a little thing in the corner that says 5 cents. So I'm trying to find someone who might be able to do like a pulp cover. So this is a shout out there. Yeah,
I think you can find that. I think we've got enough resources that mm-hmm. you can find something like that.
So, yeah. So I'm looking at that. So that I'm looking at quarter two. So I'm looking at sometime in springtime.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
And getting a little closer to it, I will be actually putting a release date. And yes, you're right. This year at some point, we're going to be doing a roast. I expect it to be torn apart.
Good.
So expect it to be torn apart.
I'll just be
so
like, why is that guy that. Such an idiot?
Why is this guy an idiot? Why do you make these bad decisions?
Why is Jamie Hyneman an idiot?
Why do you make these bad decisions?
That
was some inside baseball. Just wait. So what do we got going on next week, man?
Next week, we're going to continue with Dune. I guess we're going to try to get through book two, if possible. And that'll leave us in a nice place where going into the holidays themselves, we can be a little bit chill, and we'll get to book three by the end of December, but like maybe we hit a free birthday, but you know, we're not rushing so much.
Sure, sure. And that was what, yeah. So next week we're gonna get together. We will be live on Twitch the same time that we are recording.
And that is and we're, your channel, which is
twitch.tv/violenceobscene. Check and it honestly, out, give it a follow.
If you are listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, be aware that by the time this comes up that day, because I'm releasing these Monday a week out, so it's going to be that night. So yeah. Check violence, twitch.tv/violenceobscene that
tonight.
Evening. Tonight.
But is, not tonight.
But not tonight. Next
but
week.
But tonight.
Yes.
But also tonight.
Yes. Live. So, right in your face.
Well, good talk, my friend. Good talk.
Yeah,
I'm
man.
Rance.
Real good talk. I'm Bob. This is The Quarantine Book Club. You can find us at www.thequarantinebookclub.com. Don't forget the, or you'll end up at the other Quarantine Book Club website, which is not as good as us. You can find, as I said, you can find Rance on Twitch at Violence of Scene. What was that?
I just specifically played a noise because I am finding that I every day, every week, I look up quarantinebookclub.com. Not the Quarantine Book Club, which is what we are. Yes. But I look up the bad Quarantine Book Club and I just get even more angry. And I'm happy. I think there's more than two Quarantine Book Clubs.
Yes. Oh,
there's us. There's the one you pay for. But I think there is a website that is also a bunch of women who read books. Mm-hmm. And actually,
those
they're
darn
totally
women.
Fine. Those damn dang women. They're actually really cool. But I would like to have a verbal altercation with them at some point.
Did I tell you that
confirmed for MRA? Me confirmed
you
for
MRA.
MRA.
Did yes. I tell you that my librarian at the school that I work at every month releases a new book suggestion, and she refers to it as the Quarantine Book Club, and I got really butthurt about it one day.
Well, maybe it means that we jumped too soon on the name, right? Like,
I want to say, librarian at my school, I'm coming for you. We had a nice conversation, Patty. We had a nice conversation standing in line to get our COVID tests, but I'm done with that. It's bullshit. Stop using my name. Stop using Quarantine Book Club 2020. No copyright, no trademark, but it's mine.
P. Sizzle, he's coming for you. He's going to pull a Logan Paul and Mayweather and just destroy you.
Logan Paul?
Did what? Yeah, did you hear that Logan Paul and Mayweather are having an actual fight?
Are they having one?
Yeah, they're having a fight. So you want to take bets soon?
Yes, that sounds awesome. I hope Logan Paul gets his face smashed in.
Those
are like the anti-us brothers, except they're really, I mean, they're famous and handsome. So like
they suck.
They do suck, man. But you know what? You know what doesn't suck? Following us on Instagram at the Quarantine Book Club podcast, or on our Facebook, which is at the Quarantine Book Club. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/bobdesign. And our new Twitch channel, which is going to be twitch.tv/quarantinebookclub, not with a the.
Glad you got this really nailed down. I just sort of like mentally zone out when you
that's
go
fine.
Into this part.
We may not even use that. We've been discussing other ways of streaming
what's that?
Our podcast.
Wait, what's that? Oh yeah, yeah.
Like we're like Rance the other day. Rance was like, maybe we should just use YouTube.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking about it. Like, I'm thinking about
all
these new things.
You went through all this work to create a new Twitch channel, which is just sitting up there empty going, we'll let you know when they put something out.
No, it's been, no. There's dates and everything on it.
It looks beautiful, man.
Well, maybe
it looks better than my Twitch channel.
Maybe we'll do it. I don't know. Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm lazy, too. So it's like.
You and me both, man. And you know what?
Maybe I'm lazy.
T-minus 2 weeks until winter break for this bad boy.
Yep, then, this guy right here. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you how many days. Wait. I got 9 days. 9 days of work.
Same.
So, we'll see you when it's 5 days of work.
That sounds like a plan.
On Twitch.
Later.
Have a good rest of your day. Take care. Remember, if you're listening to us, make sure to follow us on all the stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm Rance.
I'm Bob.
This is the Quarantine Book Club.
Remember to stay safe and be kind to each other.